Late last month, the New York Times called into question the value of the National Football League's research into concussion, presented as a series of reports in the journal Neurosurgery. The Times charged that some 100 concussions sustained by the league's players had not been included in a six-year epidemiological study of the problem. Those 100 concussions would have increased the total concussions over the study period, 1996 to 2001, by more than 10%. We wanted to investigate this bit, so we reached out to Dr. Ira Kasson, a co-author of the articles, to ask him to talk with us about the research design they used, and he kindly agreed to this conversation. Dr. Kasson served on the league's Committee on Mild Traumatic Brain Injury, or MTBI, from its inception in 1995. He served as its co-chair from 2007 to 2009. And left the NFL in 2010. Dr. Kasson practices as a neurologist in Forest Hills, New York. Welcome, Dr. Kasson.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
I want to focus on that paper from January 2004, published in Neurosurgery. You know, many research articles discuss design limitations in the discussion. For instance, saying that they only included patients with certain characteristics. And sometimes that limits the general applicability of the conclusions. In the case of the NFL research, in the paper describing the research design and providing conclusions, the discussion of design limitations doesn't mention that not all teams may have filled out the special forms. Did you know that to be true?
I think that your statement regarding that is not really fully accurate.
Okay.
As we noted in the paper on a few occasions, we noted that the results were with limitations that were the limitations, specific limitations of the data. We also noted in that article specifically that despite all our efforts, it remains unclear whether the project identified all cases of MTBI during the study period.
Okay.
So therefore, we never claimed, nor in our methodology did we ever suggest that every MTBI that might have occurred was included.
Okay. Point taken. There was an editorial by somebody introducing that series of articles. I believe it was published in the previous October 2003, I think. And the editorial was by Elliot Pellman, the lead author. And in his introductory editorial, he said that that a memo had been sent to team executives by the league commissioner, quotes, emphasizing the importance of this information and mandating compliance in filling out these detailed forms. So it's possible, as you say, that you didn't know whether every team was compliant with filling out the forms. Let's look at when you present the results, you talk about there being 1,913 games. Now those games included every game in the six seasons studied, including preseason games and championship games, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the assumption that you made, I think, was that all the games were included and all players, whether or not they reported, were included in the calculations. The New York Times, whether rightly or wrongly, I haven't seen how they did it, but they described finding reports of some 100 concussions that were not in the data. So the question is, if you assumed that all teams and all players were accounted for in your calculations and they weren't, then that would throw off your relative risks, wouldn't it, a bit?
Well, this is a multi-part question you're asking me.
Okay.
First, we need to go back to the Times' claim that there were more than 100 cases that were not included in the database.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is that there is no way for any of us on the committee, any of us who were involved in this research, to verify or know whether or not that statement is accurate.
Okay.
And it's very important that the audience understand why that is. In a study like this, just like in most ethical medical studies, the confidentiality between the researcher and the subjects is of paramount importance.
Mm-hmm.
It is of paramount importance to maintain the anonymity of the subjects who cooperate and participate in studies like these and most other medical studies.
Right.
We placed a great deal of emphasis on maintaining that confidentiality and on fulfilling our ethical obligation to maintain their anonymity of the subjects and maintain their confidentiality. We therefore, when we set this study up, made it very airtight and made it very difficult, if not impossible, for anybody to ever figure out who the actual players were linked with the data for each event.
Mm.
Nobody on our committee, none of us, ever saw any names. All we saw were data in the aggregate, and the players were all identified by coded numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And none of us had any idea, nor know anybody else, who the actual player was.
Mm-hmm.
So if one cannot verify who the 700 and I think it's 87, whatever the number was, cases were, what the names are linked to them, it's not accurate to then say, well, how could you then determine that the other 100 that they supposedly found were not included? Because we can't tell you by name who was and who wasn't included. So I don't believe that the New York Times statements are accurate or valid.
Okay, and I'm not trying to defend the New York Times, but I'm just pointing out that in your methods, for all the concussions that you did count, you applied that against the baseline of 1,913 games over the 6-year period. And you say that you don't know whether all the teams were compliant.
What I'm saying is there's no way for anybody to know that. What I will say is this. We made every effort. We made enormous efforts to educate team physicians on all the teams. We had numerous educational symposia. We sent out memos. The commissioner of the league at first strongly encouraged everybody to participate. At some point during the study over the years, mandated participation. When the epidemiologist who was getting the blinded coded forms from the team physicians, every year or two at our committee meetings, we would go over in aggregate the data coming through, and on a couple of occasions, the epidemiologist pointed out that certain teams were reporting fewer concussions than other teams. And when that happens, committee members who happen to know the team doctors for those teams or the league office committee from the commissioner's office contacted those team medical staffs and reminded them how it was their obligation to fill out the forms every time they came across an MTBI, came to their attention, that met our very broad criteria for MTBI.
Mm-hmm.
We made every possible effort and extreme efforts to collect this data, and every piece of data that was sent in was included. So if there were some that may not have been sent in, there is no way to know that.
Okay, and that's fair enough. Again, though, there were included in your calculations 1,913 games, and it's possible. Let's just say, for instance, that a team skipped a few games, or the Times says the Dallas Cowboys never reported any concussions in the 6-year, for the 6-year period. That would throw off your calculations, say, in the tables in which you give risks per 100 game positions, right? I mean, I think you'd agree.
It would throw them off by a small amount, not by a significant amount.
Well, okay, but I think reasonable people can disagree about how far off they could be thrown. I guess the question is...
No, I think reasonable people would not disagree about how far they would be thrown off, even if some of the statements the Times saying is true. And I'm not saying they are, because to my experience, I know from experience I've had on the league, and I did serve as a neurological consultant to teams over the years, I know that some of those statements in the Times article are completely inaccurate.
Okay.
I will not go further than that for confidentiality reasons, but I know that they're inaccurate, some of those statements. I have no reason to believe that what they're saying is accurate or correct.
Okay.
So I think I would much rather say that I don't believe what they're saying is accurate.
Okay. I understand that. But you're also saying that there was no way of knowing whether all teams reported all concussions because of the strict confidentiality. And your assumption is that was a rare occurrence for people not to report their data because, as the editorial said, the commissioner mandated that people comply with this study.
And beyond that, because we educated the doctors to do it, we paid attention, we contacted teams that weren't reporting as many, so we made every possible effort, and we had an extremely broad definition. If you look at the definition of MTBI that we use in these studies, it's extremely broad, mm-hmm. and so broad that we collected some data on some cases that would not even qualify as MTBIs. We counted anybody who had a headache was included. So therefore, we have numbers that perhaps show incidences even a little higher than they really are. And if there were a few games that somehow you're saying didn't get into the data, I would be very surprised if it didn't balance out with the over-reporting of what we called MTBI for the purposes of this study, because we wanted to be over in finding data. We wanted to get reports on everything. So I really think that, although I'm not going to say the data, that the actual number is perfect to 100%, I would say that if there was some cases that weren't reported, I don't think that would have a dramatic difference in the incidences and in the validity of the results that we reported.
Okay. The data are still available somewhere. I believe if they're not with the researchers, they're with the epidemiologist. And so my question is, do you think that in the interest of giving more validity to the research and to those putting a finer point on the results, do you think those data would be shared with other researchers if they asked?
Shared how? They're anonymous data.
There are dates
They're not attached to anybody's names.
So right.
Anybody else looking at that data still would have the same situation. You can't tell who those players are. The New York Times says they broke the code. I don't trust them.
Well, that's...
I've had experiences with them over the years. They tell untruths very frequently.
I'm not talking about sharing it with the New York Times. I'm talking about sharing it with other concussion researchers who, given the logs of injury and given the team schedules, might be able to divine from that which games these things are talking about. And in fact, it wouldn't matter if the player was identified. I guess it would matter in the case of the quarterback. There's only one of those on each team.
That's right. Of course it would matter.
Okay.
I'm not going to... Listen, I have no association with the NFL at this point.
Right.
And I don't know who's holding on to that data or who, if anybody, where that data is.
Yeah.
I can't speak for the group that per se, but I can say from myself, I would not want to give this data to anybody with the idea that they're going to try to identify the teams and therefore the players.
Okay.
Listen, I think confidentiality needs to be protected. The anonymity of the subjects needs to be protected. And I don't think that's just a theoretical or philosophical point.
No.
I think that that's a very, very important point. If people, not just players, but people who are going to be the subjects of medical studies realize or come to think that even though the doctor and the researcher says we're going to keep this confidential, they come to think that years later somebody's going to try to go through this whole thing and to try to identify them. Who's going to participate in research studies in the future?
But I would suggest that if the players decided, look, in the interests of making this this research more valuable, that they would allow their names to be used or not used, but at least de-identified in the interest of determining how many games are included in the denominator here.
Again, I will tell you, let me point in another important issue about this that I thought would be a little maybe too not technical, but something that we wouldn't want to discuss, but we can. When the NFL, our committee, decided to do this paper and do this research to study this, it's important to remember that the National Football League, which we were a committee of, has a management labor relationship with the players through the NFL Players Association.
Yes.
And when employers are going to do a study of their employees, this is something that has to be agreed upon by both sides as part of collective bargaining agreements that have been made between the two sides.
I understand.
When we set up this study, before we did anything, lawyers from the NFL, plus our committee chairman, met with representatives, including, I believe it was the president of the Players Association, I know higher-ups in that organization, and their lawyers, to go through and set up a specific process of collecting the data and using the data, so specifically, no one would ever be able to identify any player with any of the medical data, so it would only be evaluated in aggregate, and so that the players were assured that their confidentiality and anonymity were maintained. That was a very important part of the development of this methodology and the way this study was put together. And we paid very much attention to that and take that very seriously.
Okay.
And I still do.
All right. Well, Dr. Cass and I want to thank you for talking with us today.
You're welcome. It was nice to talk to you.
That was Clinical Conversation number 201. All previous podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. I'm Joe Elia. My executive producer is Kristen Kelly. We come to you through the NEJM Group. Thanks so much for listening.